We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Metro, read by Susan Ray.
A couple from South Wales have appeared at Hammersmith Magistrates Court after being captured on CCTV having sex in public at the Westfield Shopping Centre. The magistrate said that the couple would now be temporarily excluded from coming within the M25.
Thanks to everyone for sending in that rudeness. And thanks to Susan for using that particular emphasis. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Hugo Rifkin and Lucy Porter. And opposite them on my left, Sarah Kendall and Ellis James. So, Hugo, why has contract dismay kept the doctor away?
OK, so this would be the junior doctor's strike, much of which boils down to a dispute over whether or not doctors should have to work on Saturdays. And, of course, I understand why they're cross, because we on this panel record the show to go out on Friday nights, and then we come in again for no extra money for the Saturday and record it again, word for word. And I mean, I don't get paid any more for that. It's similarly an outrage. But, you know, it sprawls in various directions, the doctor's strike. There's a lot of issues here. There's the big question of whether it's morally right for doctors to strike at all. People disagree. Whether the British public might not actually really be to blame for wanting a sort of a cheap NHS, but also wanting the people who work for it to get paid a lot of money. But I'd like to focus instead on Jeremy Hunt, the health secretary, and how incredibly healthy he looks. You know, he's got this sort of fresh skin, sort of trim form, you know, perfect BMI. And I've been wondering whether that's why he got the job. Because, I mean, you can't have a health secretary who needs to go to the doctor a lot, because he'd be going in and he'd be going, you know, the doctor would be our health secretary, hello, I'm afraid we're going to have to do this massively invasive bowel examination. And he'd be like, but I haven't even told you what's wrong yet. And the doctor would be, yeah, but still. You know.
I went down to our local hospital because I thought I'll go and give my support. Because I always do, like, whenever there's a strike I agree with, I think I'll go and do something. Like, I always honk at firemen. Not even when they're on strike. Just
even when you're
honk.
Not driving.
Yeah. Honk! There was all this attempt to smear the junior doctors, saying, oh, they're, you know, the Moe medics and, oh, they live these sort of fantastic lifestyles. But I don't think that most people mind doctors being quite well paid.
And that Moe medics thing, can you think of a worse group of people to try and demonise than the doctors? It sort of doesn't make any sense. And who out there thinks that being a junior doctor is a skive? When you're 18 and you tell your parents, friends, oh, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, I'll get accepted, I'll do a medical degree, no one goes, oh, scared of a bit of hard grafting. It's just unbelievable. Pay them. I'm behind the doctors. Just pay them what they want and stop them from working stupid hours. Who wants a tired doctor?
Okay, further, Ellis, I'd like a doctor who's chronically overslept.
I think that there are certain professions that they have to be well paid. Like, for example, firefighters. Like, that's an important job and it has to be well paid. Because if the money sucks, then the only people who are going to want to do it are people who just really dig being around fires. Like, so if you pay medics badly, you're just going to get a bunch of people who just love diseases and scalpels. They just...
According to the government, how much more likely are you to die if you're admitted to hospital after suffering a stroke on the weekend?
20%. But hasn't that been discredited? Because isn't it because people tend to only go into hospital at the weekend if they're very ill, otherwise they wait until Monday, rather than doctors sort of taking it easy on a Saturday and thinking, oh, sod it.
But you're more likely to die in hospital at the weekend even if you went in not on the weekend. In fact, you're marginally less likely to die if you go in on the weekend because... I don't know, you just are. Because it takes a few days to die in hospital, normally.
But it takes longer to die in hospital, what, presumably, because there's doctors and things like that trying to stop you...
I don't know.
...dying. It's a false economy, isn't it, Doc? Because they work very, very hard to keep people alive. But, they're just creating more work for themselves, aren't they? Anyone know what happened in Sandwell Hospital in West Bromwich?
They called the doctors back to work, but the email had been written the day before. The email saying, it's really busy, come back, we need you. And they went, no, you wrote that yesterday. That's cheating. surely.
They call it, it was a level 4 incident, they said, which is a very serious level 4 incident. Level 1 is slipping on a banana skin. Level 5 would be Ebola. or a consultant's Audi being blocked in. Right, well, erogenously, this is the junior doctor's strike that disrupted NHS services this week, leading to the cancellation of operations and appointments while leaving the transmission of the BBC television series Doctors tragically uninterrupted. The junior doctors were joined on strike by many people who supported their cause, as well as several rather irritating people who just wanted them to have a quick look at this mole they've got. One doctor on the picket line at St George's Hospital Tooting paid her own inspiring tribute to Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt by holding aloft a large handcrafted turd called Jeremy. When I say handcrafted, I mean it was made out of fabric, not... Well, you can imagine. 2 points to Hugo. Lucy, who wants to sink estates?
This is the government's housing bill, which I think... So bits of it have gone through. There was... the bit that caught my eye was there was an amendment to the housing bill, which was proposed by a Labour MP, which was basically to ensure that homes should be fit for human habitation, which got defeated 312 to 219. And the local government minister, Marcus Jones, said the government believed that homes should be fit for human habitation but did not want to pass the new law that would explicitly require it. That makes you sound a bit evil. Of course, about a third of the House of Commons are landlords, so obviously they're coming at it from that perspective. I mean, I think, you know, people say that this government is against the state ownership of housing, but actually it is getting to a point where only MPs will be able to afford to buy houses, thus returning it to parliamentary control. And it would be, I mean, for an MP, it's quite a good idea to say to your constituents, I own your houses, how do you feel about voting for me now?
OK, I'm now going to defend both the political class and the government, because I know that always goes down really well. So, firstly... The reason why lots of MPs own houses, own flats that they rent out, is because since the expenses scandal, they are allowed to claim for rent but not for mortgage repayments. Okay. So all the ones who owned flats rented out their flats and now rent new flats at much more expense. It's mental. But that's why... So yeah,
this is you defending them?
Sort of. So like 27% of MPs are landlords, but that's
27%
why.
Of Conservative MPs are landlords.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A lot of them are housing SNP members. Yeah.
But the other thing, it's not quite as simple as there was going to be a law to make homes fit for human habitation and now they're not. Because at the moment, there is still an obligation to make homes fit for human habitation, but it's not by law, it's through councils. So if your home isn't, the council has to enforce it. And this law would have made it a law, so it wasn't the council's problem. So it was a civil or criminal problem.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand not wanting to introduce unnecessary legislation, but saying councils have to sort it out.
But I mean, it's not
it's
like
you never think, oh, good, it's in the hands of the council. That'll work out well.
But I mean, it's not like in the absence of this law, you'll rent a flat and you'll go in and you'll be like, I'm sorry, it's full of wolves. And the landlord will be, yeah. You know, I mean, it's not quite that bad.
I lived in lots of flats in Cardiff in my 20s that weren't fit for human habitation. But in some of those flats, I was 100% responsible. Well, it's all my hands up.
I looked around a house in Peckham with my wife, and this estate agent was showing us around. There was a pair of old pants on the floor in the sitting room. I said, is that a pair of pants, to the estate agent? And he went, yeah, they've been there ages. Does anyone know how many of Jeremy Corbyn's questions at PMQs are about housing?
All of them?
Exactly, all of them, all six. None of which, oddly enough, were, when can I stop doing this and just go home? Also, does anyone know who now, then, with the new bill, who gets to decide what constitutes affordable housing?
Is it developers? Or is it something crazy like that?
No, the government get to decide.
Oh, really?
So I'm not sure this is a decision we should be leaving to David Cameron, given he's a man who could afford to buy Blenheim Palace and simply use it as a place to keep his many, many discarded footmen. is the case. OK, teasingly, this is the government's new housing bill, because Christmas may be over, but the gifts just keep on coming. The bill passed its first reading in the House of Commons on Tuesday, when the rest of us were concentrating on not getting ill so as to not bother the doctors. Cameron described sink estates as concrete slabs dropped from on high, brutal high-rise towers and dark alleyways that are a gift to criminals and drug dealers. Of course, that's what drives most young people to crime. Architecture. 2 points to Lucy. Sarah, which knight should have got an earlier flight?
This is the story about Environment Agency boss Sir Philip Dilley resigning. It's very unfortunate because I think there was a little bit of confusion. Even though it's been the wettest December on record, he very clearly stated, over the Christmas period, I will be with my family at home. In Barbados. I'm just going to be at my second home whilst you all drown. And the media got the wrong end of the stick, as the media does. So, yeah, he's resigned.
Do you think that's fair?
Yes, I do think that's fair, and I think I could do his job. Because I've looked at all the photographs, and it seems to me that you just have to wear a high-vis jacket and nod whilst wet people talk to you. You know, it's really unfortunate, though. The fluorescent jacket really highlighted his Caribbean tan.
So, no, what does the government plan to do about flood defences in the UK, given what's happened?
I think they're not really going to do anything. They're going to talk a bit and sit and just sort of, you know, shore up London a bit. And I mean, it's only the north. Come on.
They are investing some money, but it's quite cleverly worded. They're investing, for instance, £171 million they've invested to maintain existing flood defences. So any flood defences that have already been breached, I mean, the bridge that's fallen down, etc., that actually represents a saving.
I mean, it's good to have somebody to sack. In a way, it's sort of brilliant, because if he'd been remotely competent, which would involve not being in Barbados, then the government might actually have to do something. But you can imagine just the massive relief. He was in Bob. Brilliant. It's his fault. Great. Job done.
The couple that had that massive lottery win in Scotland last week, their hometown was very badly affected by the floods, and they're going to spend some of their 50 million quid on sort of, you know, shoring up flood defences in the town. So the new Tory policy is more lottery winners in Scotland and Cumbria.
Well, isn't it? It's a 3-day-a-week position. It's 100 grand a year for 3 days a week. And it is just unfortunate that one of those 3 days was when the floods happened, because otherwise he'd have been home free. But, I mean, that is, you know, puts the junior doctors slightly into perspective, doesn't it? You know?
If he spends the other 2 days of the week heading the Environment Agency in Barbados, then I reckon he's in the clear, actually.
Yeah, so he really should have flown back from England to deal with our heat wave. Well, pertinently, this is the resignation of Sir Philip Dilley as head of the Environment Agency. He was roundly criticised after not immediately rushing back from his holes to visit the flood-stricken areas, having failed to realise how important it is for the nation's morale to see a rich person in wellies tutting at some brown water. Sir Philip claimed his statement about being at home wasn't misleading, as he felt as at home in Barbados as he did in the UK, much like the residents of York feel as at home in a temporary flood shelter as they do in the reeking sodden shells of their decimated homes. But if you think Philip Dilley is slow to react to a crisis, you should see him working with his assistant, Philip Dally. They don't get much done, but it is enormous fun for all the family. 2 points to Sarah. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Lucy have 6, Sarah and Ellis have 5. We start round two with a story from the BBC News website.
Surgeons are set to carry out the first penis transplant in the United States. The 12-hour procedure will involve stitching key nerves and blood vessels in an operation that doctors hope will improve patients' quality of life and help them re-enter society.
Thanks to James Ward for cutting and pasting that into an email. Hugo, whose open door is proving jarring?
This is this really quite upsetting story about, on New Year's Eve, gangs of men who may or may not have been migrants, may or may not have sexually molested lots of women in Cologne, in Germany. And there's quite a fuss in Germany because, of course, Angela Merkel has had this sort of open-door immigration policy for refugees, you know, letting in hundreds of thousands of people. And this is being directly linked. There's this idea that the media underreported this for fear of stoking racial tensions, but it's put the country's sort of liberal politics in some degree of crisis, and they're not quite sure what to do about it. A more recent sort of controversy has come from the mayor of Cologne, who's suggested that women can actually do something about all this themselves by just keep at an arm's length from strangers. which has been said, you know, this suggests that it's all women's fault and they should be doing it themselves. But also that phrase, to keep it an arm's length from strangers. I mean, personally, I'm just not sure it's the best advice to tell Germans confronted with a racial minority to stand in a public place and stretch their arms out.
How do the police describe the New Year celebrations in Cologne?
I don't know. Bad.
They describe them as peaceful. I don't know what constitutes a big night for the Cologne police. Something like Hieronymus Bosch directing an episode of Game of Thrones.
Do you know what I thought when I saw Angela Merkel give a statement to the press about this? I just thought you'd have to be insane to want to be a president or a prime minister or chancellor of a big country. Because who watches the news and thinks, right, okay, so we've got ISIS or Daesh, and then we've got war in Syria, should we bomb northern Syria? And obviously that's going to lead to the biggest refugee crisis since the Second World War. Do you know who the best person to sort that out is? Me! Who thinks that? Who at home is watching the news or reading the paper thinking, yeah, I quite want to get stuck into this, actually. I think I could make a difference. If I was, by some horrendous administrative error, Prime Minister of Britain, I would be under a duvet within seconds, claiming to have a migraine. I just think...
You would respect them more if anyone in their, you know, their eventual end of career autobiography did just come along and say, do you know what, I just kind of fell into it.
I'm a yes man.
I did end up being head girl of my school in a not dissimilar way.
That's not
way.
The same.
They had a massive refugee crisis while she was head girl. She dealt with it admirably.
Do you know what the problem with this show is? It's topical. Yeah. And the news is horrendous some weeks. Yeah. You just think, I just become so nostalgic for these certainties of the Cold War. You know, I've got such fond memories. I grew up during the Cold War. You know, we really knew where we stood, didn't we? Mutually assured destruction. It sounds so great when you think about it. Do what I like about history. You know how it ended. You're like, oh, okay, well, that happened. Good. So that, you know, we can draw a line under that. But this present, that present is horrendous. This is awful.
Oh dear.
But you know, it is one of those stories that there are so many conflicting accounts. It's almost like you just want to hear the women's account, because if they just speak to all the women that this thing happened to, that seems to me the voice, the crucial voice that has been lost in all this.
Well, and, yeah, the idea that actually let's take sexual violence against women seriously no matter who the perpetrators are. Right.
I think what worries me is that this week any questions might be funnier than the news quiz.
It often is.
Thanks, Lucy. And
at least there was David Bowie, though. And to cheer us up.
Oh, right. Yeah. God. Yeah. It's been, and Alan Rickman. I mean, oh, yeah. Can't. Did you see the Rick Wakeman playing Life on Mars? Nice. That was just absolutely gorgeous.
I shared a dressing room with Rick Wakeman once at a charity thing, and I said to him, when you wake up in the morning, how long does it take before you think, I played the piano on Life on Mars? And he said, well, you've got to remember how many Des O'Connor albums I also played. Vivaciously, this is the decision of Chancellor of Germany and madcap gallabout town Frau Angela Merkel to speed up the deportation of refugees. This is a U-turn from Merkel's open-door policy on refugees to a stance one can only describe as neo-Farageist. Many were angered by Cologne Mayor Henrietta Rieker, who issued a code of conduct for women to avoid sexual assaults in the city. The code of conduct for women included sticking to a group of trusted acquaintances, keeping at arm's length to strangers, and, where possible, being a man. 2 points to Hugo. Ellis, who wants to send Rhodes to ruin?
Right, OK, well, that is the Cecil Rhodes statue story. If you're new to this story, if you haven't been following it, Cecil Rhodes, he was a 19th century imperialist, as you can imagine, from a 19th century sort of colonial businessman with a moustache called Cecil. He was a massive racist. I mean, even by the standards of the day, he was pretty fruity in some of his opinions. And not after a few pints. I mean, all the time, core philosophy stuff. In the same way that, you know, I will, you know, drive the extra 25 miles if a service is a welcome break. That is part of my own core philosophy. Set of roads was very much that the Anglo-Saxons are a superior race to everyone else. There's a statue of him outside Oriel College in Oxford, because that's where he went in the 1870s, and he's paid for a scholarship, which has paid for lots of people's degrees. But there's a campaign to pull down the statue because people think, you know, it's racist, and that's fair enough. That it's, I can understand the sort of argument that it's a symbol of Britain's imperialist past, is a sort of tacit, you know, it condones his legacy and all that sort of thing. I've got sort of some sympathy for that, you know, showing foreign students around going, oh, there's the bookshop, that's the dean's office, it's the statue of our most famous racist alumnus. It's leaves quite a sour taste in the mouth. But then again, the argument against pulling it down, and that's what they're going to do, they're not going to destroy it, is that you can't really airbrush history, can you? Like, a lot of people that we have statues of in the UK have got a pretty sort of dodgy past. And in the same way that, you know, Cecil Rhodes, you're sort of judging him by the standards of today, and he was living in Victorian times, I'm well aware that history will judge me very harshly for in the 90s having a Take That-inspired centre party and wearing a leather waistcoat to a house party. I mean, history will judge me very badly for that. So, I mean, it's a big campaign in Oxford. I'm just amazed that they've got the time. I'm amazed as well that for £9,000 a year, you don't get your own statue to keep and that anyone's sort of people are bothered by it. Instinctively, I thought I'd support taking the statue down, but I just think that, you know, Bristol Dock was built on slavery, Liverpool Dock was built on slavery. There are so many dodgy statues. Where do you start? And I just think there's got to be bigger fish to fry.
Maybe personally, we should take them all down. I mean, just in terms of, you know, if you're tidying a room, if you have clean surfaces, it looks really tidy. Well, think how sort of smart a New Britain would look if all of our plinths were suddenly empty.
I have a solution.
Oh, great.
My solution is leave it where it is, but ridicule it, because ridicule is always, this, you know, I think, an effective way to protest. And I think one of the greatest statues in the United Kingdom is the statue of the Duke of Wellington in Glasgow, which always sports a traffic cone on the Duke of Wellington's head. But I think that's funny. I think, you know, that's the way to go. I mean, give him a red nose. And
yeah, I mean, if you really wanted to wind him up, you could black him up. You'd have really hated it.
Ineluctably, this is the Chancellor of Oxford University, Lord Patton, who, despite student protests, has refused to remove a statue of the imperialist white supremacist and, one supposes, difficult dinner party guest, Cecil Rhodes. There's a problem with statues, full stop, because at some point we have to face up to the fact that everyone who's been involved in any significant way with the history of this country is, to a greater or lesser extent, an utter bastard. 2 points to Ellis. Sarah, which moguls updated his model?
Yeah, well, it's bad news, ladies. Mega hunk Rupert Murdoch. He's taken now. He's engaged to Jerry Hall, and I think Jerry Hall is a genius. Personally, I'll tell you what the secret is to being happily married to an aging billionaire. Lots and lots of surprises. Just as many. Come on. I'm sorry, it's 4 a.m. I didn't mean to startle you. The thing that I love most about this story, though, that Joan Collins tweeted congratulations to Jerry Hall and her new beau. You cannot refer to an 85-year-old man as a beau. That's crazy. The man has got so many skin flaps, you can't find his eyes anymore. He's got a face like an advent calendar.
It was announced in the Times at a very reasonable rate, I'm sure. All very happy.
It was in the marriages and death section.
I also don't like the suggestion that Jerry Hall is a gold digger. She's a wealthy woman in her own right, I'm sure. The awful thing is, he must just be a bit of a laugh. You know, she must think he's all right, and that scares me. That scares me a lot. But it is, I've been in a similar situation to Jerry Hall. Because she is worth about 15 million, and he is apparently worth like over 11 billion. And when I was at university, I was a student, I was skin, and I went out with someone who had a full-time job at Superdrug.
Gerontophilically, this is the news that Rupert Murdoch and Jerry Hall are to wed, and I know there will be a lot of cynics and naysayers, but I could personally not wish more happiness to a man who has spent his life giving so much untold joy to billions. Jerry Hall and Rupert Murdoch don't sound like a celebrity couple so much as the last two spitting image puppets yet to be melted down. It could just as easily have been Jane Torvill married in Gaza. Jerry Hall once said, to keep a man, you need to be a maid in the living room, a cook in the kitchen, and a whore in the bedroom. Although one imagines it would be more useful to Rupert if in every room she could just be an ambulatory nurse. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Hugo.
This is a headline from the Thurrock Gazette, and it's been sent in by lots of people. And it reads, South Oakenden Sea Cadet beats off 14,000 others to win Advanced Seaman Award. I don't even know why that's funny.
Lucy.
Claire Edington spotted this bit of regional stereotyping on the M&S Lunch to You website. Our traditional menu consists of classic mini roll platter, classic sandwich selection, quiche selection, and a traditional fruit basket. Please note that the fruit basket is not available in Scotland.
Sarah.
This was found on the notice board of Canterbury Hospital and sent in by Jordana from London. And it says, do you find it difficult to talk to hospital staff? There is a book that may help you. Please ask staff for a copy.
Ellis.
The following is an extract from a Mid Wales shooting newsletter sent in to us by Nicholas Ralph. Traditionally, following the first shoot of the pheasant season, prizes are awarded for the best bag. Mr. Gwyn Jones took overall prize, with David Evans coming second with the largest cock.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Lucy have 10, and so too do Sarah and Ellis. Before we leave you, here is an announcement from the What's On section of the Hereford Times, sent in by Stephanie Cannum.
Tomorrow's health walk will start at 10 a.m. Meet outside the chip shop.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkin, Lucy Porter, Sarah Kendall and Ellis James. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, James Kettle and Tom Neenan, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Dan Kiss. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Radio comedy production.